Welcome, everybody. My name is Dimitris Vardoulakis. I'm the chair of philosophy at the University of Western Sydney, philosophy is organizing these lectures in conjunction with the State Library, Radio National, ABC Radio National, and Fordham University Press. And I would like to invite Richard Neville, the Mitchell Librarian, to do the welcome to country.
Thank you, Dimitri. Welcome. My name is Richard Neville. I'm not the Richard Neville. I'm a Richard Neville. And everyone remembers meeting me in the 60s at university. And I was actually at school, however. I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we stand, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and acknowledge their elders both past and present. Now, it's wonderful to have you here. And we are delighted that this partnership with University of Western Sydney, ABC Radio National and Fordham Press is now in its third year. We're delighted too that the library is a participant in these discussions. I was just talking to David earlier and he noted he was for some reason in the library on Sunday and noted how crowded the reading room is out in the Mitchell Library reading room. It was a matter of some controversy, which some of you may have been aware of at the beginning of last year. The refurbishments are now complete, and we are delighted to see people using our collections again, and indeed the controversy seemed to have alerted many people to the fact we have collections. And secondly, that people find the space, a conducive space, to come and use. And that's not only people of our generation or other generations, but young people too are coming in after school and using that space to study and work. And I think that is a fantastic thing that we are delighted to see. The library obviously wants to be a participant in these kinds of discussions. We've recently had the inevitable restructure, and part of that has been to develop our resources so that we can actually begin to reconnect to the tertiary sector. And I think over many years, probably since the kind of reforms, if you like, of the Dawkins era, the library has lost touch with the tertiary community. I think now we're trying to get back in partnership with them. And indeed, we have already been talking to the Paul Arthur, the Digital Humanities at UWS, Tim Rouse with History at UWS, and all sorts of people at the University of Western Sydney. And we see these as important initiatives which connect our content to people and our ideas to the community. And for these reasons, we're delighted to welcome you here today. And also, a bit of a local plug. We've recently, last Tuesday night, we announced our most generous fellowship, the Coral Thomas Fellowship, which you can find details of on our website. That's $75,000. It's a biennial fellowship for basically humanities research, so I hope you will investigate that. And the library, in fact, has a significant program of fellowships which are worth exploring on our website. Now, my real role, however, is to invite Adam Bant, who is the MP for Melbourne, to say a few words about this lecture, and I think Adam actually needs really no introduction at all. So thank you.
Thanks very much. It's a real pleasure to be here. I also want to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and pay my respects to their elders past and present. I think that the caricature of those who want a more sensitive relationship to the environment would probably be fairly familiar to many of you. Humans, so the story goes, are capable of mastering the world and incredible technological achievements, and you greenies want us to go back to the Stone Age, they say. And to quote someone who epitomises this, Ian Plimer, who's written a number of books sceptical of climate change, says, if you're a Green, and it doesn't just mean me, it means anyone who cares at all, if you're a Green and you're criticising the coal industry, then you should not use cutlery. You should go out into the bush and starve. Go out into the bush, live your sustainable life, don't bother me. And if I want some advice for you from you, I'll go to your cave and see how you're going with your sustainable living. But until then, get out of my life. However, something pretty notable is also occurring in parallel. At the same time as these kind of people are partly proved right, is our ability to burn fossil fuels at a scale unimaginable by our forebears starts to cook the planet, all of a sudden, humans aren't that powerful at all. The same people who told us of human mastery now tell us that the planet is so big and complex that there's no way we small humans could have such an effect. The same people who tell us that our country can be world leaders in science or sport or war now tell us that we're insignificant, less than 2% of the world's pollution, so nothing we did would make a difference anyway. Humans are at the top of the food chain and able to conquer the world, except it seems when it comes to climate change, in which case we're just bit players in a vastly complex ecosystem, and stop being such an egotistical anthropocentrist to imagine we had that kind of agency, man. And sadly, this all comes at a time when politics has largely been emptied of vision. Climate change has arrived at the wrong time. If it came in the 1930s, we might be having bold discussions about a New Deal to save the planet. If it came in the 1950s, we might be talking about planetary reconstruction and nation-building projects. And instead, it comes onto a scene saturated by markets, where the role for governments is simply to keep business as usual ticking over, whatever the cost to people and the planet. And where it used to be thought that economy served to exist society, now the relationship has been flipped. So as governments duck and weave about human responsibility and politicians are urged not to be political anymore, those of us in the community and in public life who want a safe climate and who want to protect our way of life have to grapple with some pretty big questions. And key amongst them is how to think about how humans should react to global warming, which we are responsible for. Some think the best way to talk about it is to talk about the way that we've spoken about war, where we can shift an economy of a country and indeed a world in a very short period of time, and when there's less to go around, people are quite happy to ration. Some say the better way to talk about it is in the language of emergency or fire, where we suspend business as usual while we deal with the emergency at hand. There's war, there's fire, there's also space. It's my personal favourite. I mean, bracketing its Cold War implications for one moment, one of the things about the Apollo project is that it projected a common vision of humanity beyond any particular nationality. But into this, you've got to also add the question of continuous growth. Someone said to me the other day at a seminar, oh, look, we can all critique the ideology of growth and we all know it's so wrong, but why do you think it's so attractive? And that's a question that stumped me and I haven't been able to work out the answer to it. So this is quite a tangled knot of very big questions, and I'm very pleased that luckily David Wood is going to answer them all for us tonight. But seriously, it is timely, though, that this lecture series is being put on, and I congratulate UWS for doing it, because in many ways on climate change, the scientists have spoken, and now it's over to the humanities to craft solutions. And I include myself in that latter category of the humanities, and I give us all a collective caution. We're all steeped in the Enlightenment tradition, and we're used to imagining that things are infinitely debatable and perfectible. And it's a strand that's also pretty strong in the progressive political tradition, where we often see our projects as perpetually unfolding principles like equality and democracy and so on. But as someone else told us a little while ago, decisions always insist. If we had world enough and time, we might be able to continue debating. But in many respects, we don't. When I go into a library or into a bookshop and pick up a philosophy text or a book that I like, I do what I suspect many people do. At some point, you check the index. And I used to look up my favourite philosopher or author to see if they were mentioned in there, to see if it meant that the book was worth buying or reading. I've heard some people even look to see if their own names is in there. I'm sure no one here does that. Now, I check philosophy texts and social theory texts to see if they talk about climate change. And I do that because it's at a time where it really is all shoulders to the wheel, and where the scientists have told us that we may only have a decade or so to turn the ship around, we have to grapple with some of the most fundamental questions. And that's why I'm really thrilled to be here at the opening of this lecture series. I do, again, congratulate UWS for putting it on, and I deeply thank David Wood for coming here to help us talk about what really is the question of our time. And so I'm thrilled to help launch it. And if I could invite Joe Gelinesi, representing the ABC's Radio National and presenter of the Philosopher's Zone program, to introduce our guest tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Tangled knot of very big questions. Thank you, Adam. I think you put that exceptionally well. Great to be here again for the Sydney Lectures. It is, in fact, our fourth Lectures. Sorry, Richard, you said three, but we've been here for four, and it's been it's interesting how the last year has gone so quickly since the last one. We're very pleased to be continuing supporters of this very fine lecture series, ABC Radio National, now known as RN. We call ourselves the Ideas Network, and there is no shortage of those ideas here. For me personally, and for my colleagues at RN, the lecture series is a reminder of my colleague at RN, the late Alan Saunders. He passed away suddenly 3 years ago. Alan offered his support for the series when Demetris came knocking. Sadly, he only got to see the first one get up and running. But the legacy of his fine work continues in this lecture series and in his program, The Philosopher's Zone, which we're trying to continue as best we can. A rather unique national program devoted to ideas, discussion and debate across the philosophical spectrum. And it's quite unique. And I'm proud to announce that, in fact, the program has been reinstated in full. Alan would be very happy, hopefully looking down from wherever he is, as a weekly offering on RN, not in seasons, as it had been after Alan's death, which gives us so much more opportunity to explore ideas and give good and proper airing to important issues that are too often kept to the academies, but in reality are important to each and every one of us, like the themes of David Wood's lectures. His work is penetrating, incisive, and ultimately inspiring. I talked to David at length about his ideas, and that interview went to air on the Philosopher's Zone yesterday. It's on again on our repeat slot on Wednesday night, and you can also hear it online. We've also published an excerpt from his first lecture, and it's already had many, many accesses and views, clearly a topic of great importance at the moment. We're also recording the series, all three lectures for RN as usual, and you will be able to hear that online and on air. Just keep a watch of our webpage for details. Thank you all for coming. Guarantee you will not be disappointed in the series. Thank you.
So I would just like to introduce David quickly and say a few things related to the running of this series by the Philosophy Research Initiative at the University of Western Sydney. So David Wood is a centennial professor of philosophy at Vanderbilt University and a philosopher of international repute. But those of you who might have looked him up and know him as someone working at Vanderbilt University may not know that he used to be a professor of philosophy at Warwick University for many years before he moved to Vanderbilt. And matter of fact, he was a unique case because he was the head of department at Warwick University when the department was very analytic, and he managed to build, he started as a single continental philosopher, and he managed to build the strongest continental philosophy department in the UK until he departed for the US. So that's an incredible political achievement for those who know the politics of academia. Professor Wood is the author of many very distinguished books. I'll just mention indicatively Time After Time, The Step Back, Ethics and Politics After Deconstruction, Thinking After Heidegger, The Deconstruction of Time, and Philosophy at the Limit. But such a list of appointments and books does not do justice to David's research. On the Vanderbilt University website, we read the following description about his research activities. My current research is centered on the ways in which climate change gives new significance and urgency to traditional ethical, political, and metaphysical issues. If we cannot go on like this, revolution is no longer a matter of social justice, but of ecological necessity. Truth, no longer a postmodern plaything, but a matter of life and death. This is not a typical scholarly description of fields of research. One immediately senses a strong ethical commitment, even political commitment, a call for revolution, which is rare for professional philosophers. First came across David's work through an edited volume, actually, called Of Derrida, Heidegger, and Spirit. And I was in my transition phase from analytic to continental philosopher. And I was describing to David yesterday how during that transition phase, you know, that Continental philosopher called Derrida was very obscure to me, and I kept on encountering book after book of texts about Derrida that I just couldn't understand. And that was the first book about Derrida that I could really understand. So I was very grateful to David for putting it together, and you could see in that collection how his own enthusiasm has inspired the rest of the contributors to that collection. Besides an academic, David is also a practicing earth artist with some works also in Australia. So we see that he kind of bridges the divide between thought and practice. And he also does that by having established his own famous ecologically sustainable farm outside Vanderbilt, which also couples as an artist residency. Don't tell him, but my secret is I'm trying to score an invitation there at some point. So we're really looking forward to these lectures, but these lectures would not have been possible without a number of people. First, I would like to thank the wonderful Samantha Hagen. I can't find her in the audience now. I'm sure she's here somewhere. From the State Library. And Joe Gallonese from the ABC, who have been absolutely instrumental in putting this lecture series together. I would like also to acknowledge once again this year the enormous contribution of Helen Tartar, the editor of Fordham University Press, who tragically died about 13 months ago in a car accident. I'll miss her absolutely infectious enthusiasm and wise counsel. There is a little anecdote about David. We're at a conference together, and I was talking to Helen about whom to invite for this year's Thinking Out Loud, and I mentioned David, and Helen got so excited about this idea, she, without telling me, she went and told David, which was fine by me, but it just showed that, you know, someone who, you know, had been in the business for 40-odd years was still so enthusiastic about things. So I miss her assistance greatly. But, you know, it's great that I've been able to work with Richard Morrison, his successor at Fordham University Press, who is equally wonderful. I would like also to extend my thanks to Professor Peter Hutchins, who is the Dean of the School of Humanities Communication Arts. Professor Hutchins, in absolutely rigorous Kantian style, never plays favorites. So his support for the Philosophy Research Initiative has even additional significance. This year's lecture would have not been possible without the support of a number of colleagues at UWS, at the Philosophy Research Initiative, and I would like to single out in particular Diego Bubio, who is on the advisory board on the executive committee of this lecture series, as well as the sine qua non of any activity of philosophy, Mariana Fragueira. And I'm also delighted that my colleague, Paul Alberts, accepted the invitation to be the respondent to Professor Wood's lectures. His own passion for the topic make him the perfect conversant with David. And on a personal note, I would like to acknowledge Amanda Third for everything, really. David, please.